It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A wild week 10 is in the books. Let's talk to the pros. Hello, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I am Ryan Wormley, joined as I am every Sunday evening by Andrew Erickson and Dr. Deepak Chona. Erickson, how was your Week 10 fantasy matchup going?
Oh, it's been fantastic. Tons of great matchups. We're getting multiple overtime games. Just absolute madness, that Bills-Vikings game. Even before the game started, it was like already drawing us in with these storylines. Is he even going to be the starter? Like, what's going to happen? But happy to break it all down tonight.
Yeah, that was an absolutely wild one. Clearly the game of the year, despite all the, as you mentioned, storylines going into that one. Deepak, how did your fantasy day treat you?
Yeah, it's up and down, but a hell of a ride today with the overtime game. So enjoying it.
Yeah, so much fun. It didn't even really matter what else happened today. That game alone would have made it an awesome week to watch some football. For those watching this show live on YouTube, thank you. We will be here every Sunday night around 7:45 Eastern all season long. If you're watching us here on youtube.com/fantasypros, please give us a like and be sure to subscribe to help us out if you enjoy our content. Click the bell to get notified of all of our latest podcasts, short videos, and live streams. And for the folks listening on the podcast, don't forget we are live each and every Sunday night. So you can watch us along with every other Fantasy Pros podcast over on our YouTube channel. Again, that's youtube.com/fantasypros. We've also got a giveaway from last week. The winner of the autographed Amari Cooper Cleveland Browns jersey, courtesy of pristineauction.com, is Patrick Trites. Please get in touch with our customer support agents at mailbag@fantasypros.com with your mailing address and proof of your subscription to the Fantasy Pros channel. We will get that jersey shipped out to you. Again, the winner is Patrick Trites. Congratulations, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. Now that we've given that away, we will do another one. If you want a chance to win a free signed Devontae Adams Las Vegas Raiders football, courtesy of, again, our friends at Pristine Auction, you need to subscribe to the Fantasy Pros YouTube channel right now. Comment below on this video, and that's it. Make sure to turn on notifications to know when new videos drop and to find out if you've one, fellas, let's get into the injury roundup to start the show as we do every week. A lot of them this week. We've had some slow injury weeks lately, which has been nice. That was not the case today. Deepak, I will start with one of the most recent ones we saw. Cooper Kupp went down with an ankle injury. This is the second time in recent weeks he has gone down with a scary looking lower body injury. This time he did leave the game, was ruled doubtful really quickly, which is never a good sign.
Right, and this one, he could barely put weight on as he was limping off. The video really looked concerning for a high ankle mechanism. These are usually multi-week absences, 3 to 6 weeks, depending on a severity. Probably an MRI pending for tomorrow, and then we'll go from there.
Erickson, if Cooper Kupp is not in this offense for a couple of weeks, are you starting anybody in Los Angeles?
Probably not. Not that you, because you could, like, going into this week, Cooper Kupp was really the only guy you had any confidence in starting, and he finished today with negative receiving yards. To add a legit injury to insult, or whatever, however you say the phrase, yeah. It's not good.
Do you think there's any chance that Allen Robinson shows signs of life if Cooper Kupp's out?
No. I mean, there are going to be guys that get targets in the offense because they're going to have to throw the ball, but it's just going to be, you know, this week Van Jefferson scored. You know, Tyler Higbee was productive this week. So I think maybe Higbee's the guy you go to because he saw the most production this week, and he's actually been productive throughout the season at points. So it'd probably be Higbee, and then I think you can find better wide receiver options, especially when we get teams back from all the bye weeks.
So we go from the most recent one in Cooper Kupp to one of the earliest injuries of the day, Leonard Fournette. I think it was called a hip pointer. Of course, that game took place in Germany in the early one today. Deepak, what did you see there?
Yeah, hip pointers are, they're structurally stable. They are very painful, though. But given that he has a bye coming up, he has a decent chance to play the following week. So Leonard Fournette, the timing might work out well for him.
Erickson, we're going to talk about Rashad White later. So I'll move on to a guy who did play today and didn't leave the game outside of a scary looking thing where he was on the ground for a little. And that's Josh Allen. But he was one of the, you know, biggest storylines going into this week, of course. The elbow issues, everybody was very worried. In fact, it really wasn't until a few minutes before game time that it was even really confirmed he was going to be the starter today. So Deepak, I know he didn't have the injury today, but what can you tell us about his injury and what we saw out of him playing through it?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Quarterbacks can play through this type of injury, though. So I wouldn't call him 100% for another week or two, but you're looking at probably 90% of Josh Allen right now. And again, as long as he doesn't take a weird hit that torques his elbow, you're probably not looking at too big of a re-injury risk.
Another wide receiver who had an ankle injury was Jerry Jeudy. That one happened in the early slate. He was ruled out for the game. It happened early on in that game. Do you think this is something that's going to be a multi-week thing for him as well?
Yeah, it's a little hard to say from the video on him, but it suggests a high ankle sprain as well. And again, those are going to average 3 to 6 weeks for most cases. And his, based on his initial reaction, looked at least moderate in severity. So I'm looking at probably at least 3 weeks for Jeudy.
Another wide receiver dealing with issues, Juju Smith-Schuster. He took a huge hit and was ruled out with a concussion, or at least it was in the concussion protocol. I didn't see if they officially called it that, but that's what everybody was assuming, at least in the moment when it first happened. Do you think this is something that he will be missing multiple weeks too, or could he come back sooner if he gets cleared quickly?
Yeah, there's a chance that he could play this the following week, but usually it did look like he had a concussion. He had this sort of arm sticking up for a moment response that is typical there. The most common outcome would be missing one game and coming back at full strength the next.
So Erickson, if Jeudy and Smith-Schuster both miss games, which guy do you like to see an increase in production more, Cortland Sutton on the Broncos or MVS on the Chiefs?
I mean, between those two guys, it's Cortland Sutton for me. I mean, MVS has just been up and down. I don't really think his role changes in the offense without Juju, because Juju operates in the middle of the field. I think that you see a bigger bump for Kadarius Toney, maybe Sky Moore, you see him more involved. Whereas Cortland Sutton, we've already seen this play out when Judy's missed time. That's when Sutton's been good, and a guy you can start with confidence, especially with next week the Broncos are playing the Raiders, who just lost to the Jeff Saturday Colts today. So, yeah, I think that Sutton's, as long as Judy's out, I think Sutton is someone you can confidently start because of the volume he's going to see.
And then lastly, Deepak, Zach Ertz had that knee issue. I think he went back to the locker room and obviously didn't return to the game. What did you see there?
Yeah, we can't say for sure on the video, but it's concerning for an ACL type of injury. So we'll find out pretty soon. His face on the way to the locker room looked pretty dejected. So not optimistic there, but hoping that the video lies.
Some other injuries just to mention. Colt McCoy left the game. He did return. Obviously not a ton of impact there since he's not usually the starter. Christian Watson left the game and returned and then had the game of his life. Cole Kmet was banged up, but nothing serious. That was the quote that the team used after the game. He came off the field at one point, also had a really nice day. Khalil Herbert had a hip injury issue. Najee Harris was also hit in the head or neck area. He returned to that game as well. Amon-Ra St. Brown was kind of rolled up on near the sideline. He stayed in the game in that one too. Thank you so much for joining us, Deepak. We will bring you back next week. For now, we will jump to a quick commercial and be back in just 30 seconds.
Later.
Want to dominate your fantasy football leagues? Well, then you need My Playbook, available only from Fantasy Pros. Struggling with the waiver wire? My playbook lets you see who the top available players are week to week. Can't decide who to start? Compare your players side by side with detailed breakdowns and projections for each week of your fantasy season. And it's all included with your premium subscription to Fantasy Pros. So sign up today at fantasypros.com or download our free My Playbook app to your Apple or Android device. Erickson, it's time for your favorite part, the headlines of the day. We missed you last week. I hope you came up with some creative stuff this time.
Oh, I mean, my first one is very, very creative about Mr. Justin Fields. Justin Fields does it again, because that's really all. I'm not trying to bury the lead here with Justin Fields, because he really is the story of the quarterback position over the last 2 weeks. Just another insane game of rushing production, 147 rushing yards, 13 carries, another massive touchdown run, 67-yard touchdown run, two rushing touchdowns in total. I mean, both of his touchdown runs were absolutely bonkers. It's one of those things where the Lions defenders are like, okay, we're going to get this guy down. And then, nope, he breaks a tackle, breaks another tackle, and he scores a touchdown. I mean, he's just a magician out there breaking tackles and using his legs. And another really productive day for him through the air as well, two passing touchdowns. So, I mean, if you picked up Fields off the waiver wire, like, you were just riding high right now. And it's not going to stop, because they're playing the Falcons next week. So keep riding Justin Fields. Let's go.
Yeah, he showed the strength on the first one where he sort of barreled over the defender in the end zone. And they showed the speed on the second one when he ran 70 yards or however long that one was. Since week five, he's the number one overall QB in total scoring. We've talked about this the last couple of weeks because it's been the case the last couple of weeks. And of course, his point totals are only going up. So since week five, he's number one in total scoring. Since week six, he's number one in average scoring. You know, you see, oh, Josh Allen had a bye, Patrick Mahomes had a bye, that's why he's, you know, at the top in total. No, he is averaging more than these guys as well. Do you think, I mean, again, I feel like we ask this every week, what should he be ranked at the quarterback position rest of season? Because for at least half of the season to date, he has been a top three guy.
I think that it's fair to put him in the, maybe not right next to the elite guys, but I think probably in the bottom of that tier. I mean, he has an elite fantasy producer. Like, the way that he's getting it done, like, the running is not going to stop. Like, it's one of these things where you need to just kind of take a step back and be like, this is what we're working with. And Justin Fields is a rushing quarterback. You know, he's not going to rush for 140 yards every single week, but is he going to rush for 50 yards every week? Like, probably. Like, that, I don't think that's going to go away, because it's part of the Bears offense. Now, he's obviously benefiting from the great matchups he's had the last couple weeks. It's not always going to be like that, so he's going to come down. So if there's ever a chance to sell high, like, it is now. Like, that still remains the plan to do, especially if you can get a guy like Josh Allen, get a guy like Jalen Hurts, who just has shown it more, has an easier schedule. And that's the thing with Fields, too, is the Bears have a tougher playoff schedule. So if you want to be smart, strategic about it, you do want to try to move him. But if you have him and you just don't feel like trading him, then just enjoy the ride.
Give me your running back headline.
So it's me. Hi. The running back you drafted number one overall. I'm back. Jonathan Taylor. I am back, going from the Taylor Swift album. I mean, look, we were all concerned about Taylor and his offense. Like, what's going to happen? It's going to be a mess. But, you know, it was positive vibes all around. Jeff Saturday put Matt Ryan back in at quarterback. That was an excellent. I mean, that alone may have gotten him the job. Just be like, hey, let's put Matt Ryan back under center. So you'll love to see that. And the fact that Jonathan Taylor was super productive, 22 carries, I believe that he had his total rushing. So 147 rushing yards, one rushing touchdown. He had two catches. I mean, he was the only running back really getting any type of work. Jordan Wilkins and Zach Moss combined for four carries. So he also had two targets and two catches. So Jonathan Taylor, like, he practiced in full this past week. And it's like, okay, does that mean he's, like, actually healthy? And I think that's what it means, that he is healthy now. So look, the Raiders are they lost this game. They lost this game against a guy who never coached in his entire career. So they definitely beat up on a bad team. It's not always going to be this good for Jonathan Taylor, but it's a sigh of relief for people that had Taylor that either bought him low or just kind of held on through the down period of his production. Like, sigh of relief.
He never coached in his career. What an interesting sentence.
Oh my God.
To say about an NFL head coach. 22 rushes, 147 yards, and a touchdown. Also two catches on two targets. Do you think that the Jonathan Taylor we see in the second half of the season will be closer to what we saw today or what we've seen so far this year?
I think it's more like what we saw today. I mean, there's more stability. I mean, if they're keeping Matt Ryan a quarterback, that makes more sense. Again, the matchup has a lot to do with it, and matchups are really something to keep in mind. So I think that Taylor is still someone that, He's not what he was last year. I think that's 100% true. The fact that they're just not, this offense just isn't going to move the ball and get him as many red zone opportunities. So if someone's going to then treat Jonathan Taylor like he was the number one overall pick from last year, then you do want to try to sell high on him because they're not, the Colts are not playing the Raiders every single week.
You've got another stud that you want to talk about for the wide receiver headline.
Yeah, now I remember why I ranked Justin Jefferson as my number one wide receiver during the draft season. I mean, Justin Jefferson, what can you not say about this particular receiver? You know, watching this game, obviously the game of the year so far, I'm like thinking like, you know, what if Jefferson had a better quarterback than Kirk Cousins? Like, what if he had Joe Burrow? Like, how cool, how fun would that be? But the guy just continues to get it done. 10 for 193 and a touchdown on 16 targets, 32% target share. And really, he is the one that's kind of making the most out of Kirk Cousins, because you look at some of these other receivers on the Vikings, like, they're getting a lot of volume too, but they're not nearly putting up the same type of production as Justin Jefferson. And the fact that, you know, Stephon Diggs made that sick one-handed catch, and then, you know, a couple, you know, 15 minutes later in the game, Justin Jefferson just makes an even better one-handed catch. Just, oh.
Yeah, it took you way too long to get to the catch. That is,
oh my God.
I mean, for my money, if you exclude the value of any catches that took place in the playoffs, which obviously, just based on importance alone, are going to be on a different level. If you exclude those, I think that's the best catch in NFL history, given came on 4th and 18 against a really good team on the road, like 2 minutes left or however much time was left on the clock. And the fact that it was a ridiculous, he got so high, pulled it down with one hand when the defender had two hands on the ball, somehow didn't let it touch the ground.
Yeah, right?
I mean, the defender
had better hands on the ball than Justin Jefferson did.
I cannot imagine seeing a better catch. We got some tweets, you know, from people responding to our highlight of it online that were like, do you think it's better than the Odell catch? I was like, yes, I think it's 1,000 times better than the Odell catch when you take everything into consideration. Am I crazy there?
No, I don't think you're crazy. I mean, I think the Odell catch just puts in this certain tier because it was a touchdown too. Like, that's really why it's so like impactful. But I mean, the Jefferson catch, like, you hit the nail on the head talking about 4th and 18, you know, the clutchness of it and the fact that the defender literally had two hands on the ball and Jefferson caught it with one hand.
Like, I think the best thing you can say about it is that, like, we talk about, like, the Odell catch. I think in the future we will talk about, like, the Justin Jefferson catch, and everybody will immediately know what you're talking about. Just a note on those 16 targets, that is a season high for him. So the most he's been peppered in a game this year. And then give me your tight end headline.
Yeah, Cole Kmet, positive touchdown regression. You love to see it. You know, last year we talked about Cole Kmet. He's like, this guy has had so much receiving production and not the touchdowns to follow. That's why you want to draft Cole Kmet, because the touchdowns are going to come. And yes, it took some time this year. It was not happening in the beginning of the year, but he has 5 touchdowns in his last 3 games. Another week of two scores again. Like, he is the guy that Justin Fields is going to in the end zone. We knew he was talented, and it just took some time. Like, sometimes these guys, even like Fields at the beginning of the year, like, it just sometimes takes some time with guys that we know are talented. And I know it can be annoying to be patient to hold certain players, but once they start to fire, that's when you need to be aggressive. So when Cole Kmet like scored 3 weeks ago, that was like the signal, like, hey, like, it's time to get on because this is for real. And I, you know, I was actually debating one of my leagues. I had Evan Engram in my tight end slot, and Cole Kmet was on the waiver. I was like, you know what? I don't mind Evan Engram, but I'm looking ahead. Cole Kmet's playing the Falcons next week. So it's like, you know, I'm going to go with Cole Kmet. And like, that's going to be a difference maker in my matchup this week, because I didn't start Evan Engram, I started Kmet, who scored 2 touchdowns. So it's those little things like that you want to look at. So excited about Kmet and just this Bears offense. Even though the Bears keep losing, that's like, that's the thing that's like kind of getting lost on the fantasy side of things. Is like, the Bears aren't winning these games, but like, Justin Fields is amazing. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do we care if they win?
Exactly.
Losing is probably good, because it means they have to like play faster to catch up, and you're just going to get more yardage and hopefully points. Who would have thought? I mean, the first 2 games of the season, Kmet had 0 catches in both games. He wasn't even targeted, I think, more than once in either of them. He just was not a part of this offense. To have come this far is really fun for anybody. I doubt anybody held on to him all this time, but for anybody who picked him back up, I think was definitely helpful. Do you think, I mean, like, is he a tight end one going forward? Probably. How high would you go with him in your rest of season rankings?
I think he'll be in the top 15. I really think that's kind of like the tier of, you know, he's still someone that you don't necessarily do cement yourself to as, oh, he's my guy no matter what, because he has been touchdown dependent the last couple weeks. And even though he has had gotten targets, it does depend a little bit on the matchups. I still don't think that he's in like the circle of trust. I mean, I know that we try to put guys in the circle of trust for tight ends like probably too like probably too aggressively. Like I thought Greg Dulcich was going to be the tight end trust, and that turned out to be wrong. So maybe he does obviously get a bump up if we're going to see Ertz miss some time. So I would say in the top 15, but like especially for next week against the Falcons, I mean, he's going to be a top 10 guy no matter what.
Before we get to the rest of the slate, I just want to take a quick second to let everybody know that if you're not currently a premium subscriber, we have an amazing deal going on right now that gets you 6 free months of access to all of our premium features and content. That includes full access to all of our My Playbook tools like the Waiver Assistant, Trade Analyzer, Start Sit Assistant, and Autopilot, along with our DFS tools and all of our Discord channels. Again, check out this great deal for 6 free months of full access to our tools and Discord over at fantasypros.com/offers.
Matchup recaps.
Erickson, we'll get to the rest of the slate here. We'll start with the early standalone game in Germany, not London this time. Seahawks at Buccaneers, and I talked about him earlier, Rashad White, 22 attempts, 105 yards, no touchdown, rushing in place of the injured Leonard Fournette. How much fab are you spending on him this week?
Look, we've been telling people to pick up Rashad White and to keep him stashed like this entire time. So he, I think, is worth a very aggressive bid and probably the rest of my waiver wire budget is what I would put on Rashad White, because even before Leonard Fournette left this game, they were splitting drives. Like, this was a committee going in. I know that White's, obviously, his numbers are boosted because Fournette didn't play, basically. It was actually after the interception. That, like, that was his last part of the game that he was actually featured in, when he threw an interception when he was trying to throw the ball to Tom Brady, which I just need to stop throwing the ball to Tom Brady. Like, I get that, like, they're doing it for the fans overseas. Like, let's get Tom Brady reception overseas. It was like, no, like, please stop this. But, yeah, Rashad White. We talked with the doctor before about Fournette, he'll be okay when he comes back, but I'm always on the pessimistic side of just, hey, like, we don't know. Like, injuries can be really weird, and we're not going to hear anything about it for so long. So be aggressive on White, even if he's going on a bye week. Be aggressive getting him, because he could come out and still be the starter. I mean, how many times has Leonard Fournette rushed for 100 yards this year? Not many. And the fact that Rashad White did it when his first, like, game where he was more featured, so I would be very aggressive about Rashad White.
Chris Godwin caught a touchdown, 6 for 71 yards. He had 8 targets. Julio Jones caught a touchdown, 3 for 53 on 5 targets. Leonard Fournette did score a touchdown too, 14 for 57 and that touchdown before leaving with the injury. And then on the Seahawks side, Kenneth Walker was the only running back with a carry, but he only had 17 yards on his 10 carries. He also did have 6 catches for 55 yards on 8 targets, which doubles his previous career high of targets. Do you think we can expect to see him more involved in the passing game going forward?
Yeah, I think that this showing here just explains him as a 3-down back. Like, and this is exactly what you want from your fantasy RB1. So if they're winning in games, he's going to be rushing the ball a lot. If they're losing in games, like in this particular matchup where they were down the entire game, this means that he's not going to get game scripted out. Like, that's kind of what separates the tiers from the elite fantasy running backs versus the matchup-based ones. Because now we know it doesn't matter what kind of game script the Seahawks are in, he's always going to be involved. So I would be definitely trying to buy low on Kenneth Walker after a disappointing game like this, because you hit the nail on the head. 100% of the RB carries, like, they're not giving the ball to anybody else except him, and we know he's super explosive. He just didn't get to rip off one of those big runs today. Like, that's really kind of what ended up happening.
And also, when Tampa is healthy, they are an elite, elite
Team Hicks was back and healthy, and he really makes a big difference up front for them.
Yeah. To answer your question, Leonard Fournette had 127 rushing yards in week one against the Cowboys, and he has not topped 100 since. In fact, he has not topped 65 in a game since then, to your point about Rashad White. Tyler Lockett also had a touchdown on this one. DK Metcalf also had 6 for 71, just to mention. Both of these teams are on bye next week. So moving into the early afternoon slate, again, game of the day, game of the year, Vikings at Bills. We already talked about Justin Jefferson, just could not gush enough about his day and that catch in particular. Some other notes, Dalvin Cook, 14 rushes, 119 yards, and a touchdown. 81 of those yards came on the one touchdown run, so really unproductive besides that. But of course, that's what you get when you have him, is an explosive guy that can break one at any time. TJ Hockenson, 10 targets in his second game with the team, 7 catches, 45 yards. Adam Thielen, 5 catches, 49 yards on 7 targets. And with Hockenson in particular, we were all really impressed that he had 9 targets just 5 days after getting traded to the Vikings. Obviously gets 10 targets today. Do you think that he's going to end up being the second piece in this passing game behind Justin Jefferson long term?
Yeah, I really do. I think that's the reason they went and got him, honestly. I think they realized Thielen is limited in his age. KJ Osborne had 11 targets today. He had 4 catches for 35 yards. Like, just kind of showing you these guys, the other Vikings pieces are just not getting the job done. And this is a team that's 8-1. Like, they are looking, they view themselves as Super Bowl caliber team. I don't view them like that, but they're trying to go for it. And kudos to them. That's what they should do. If you have a good record, you should go and try to win it. So, yeah, I think that Hockenson, you know, 9+ targets in back-to-back weeks, top 5 tight end.
Yeah, and a lot of people are sort of coming out and saying, well, you know, everybody's been calling the Vikings fraudulent all year, and they actually, you know, came out and just beat the Super Bowl favorites. I know that Josh Allen's elbow, you know, sort of limited all week, so I don't think you can take too much away from them. They went into Buffalo and beat a really, really good team, and they looked good while doing it. Like, they deserve full credit. But to be fair to anybody who was hating on them before, they had only faced one other good team this year because Tua was out in the Miami game. So they only faced one good team, and it was the Eagles who blew the doors off of them. So, like, there was plenty of reason to think that this was not a legit.
I mean, they also should have lost this game too. Like,
well, yeah, there's other games they should have lost this year too. I mean, they have been incredibly lucky this season. I think DVOA has them as like one of the worst 7-1 teams ever. So I'm just saying, eight and one now. I'm not totally buying all in yet, but again, they deserve credit for today, which is really good performance. On the Bills side of things, Josh Allen did throw for 330 yards, also rushed for 84. Typical Allen day outside of having one touchdown and two interceptions, although he has been throwing more picks lately. So that's something to keep in mind. Hopefully he's not reverting back to rookie year Josh Allen. Devin Singletary, 13 carries, just 47 yards, but two rushing touchdowns. I think early on it looked like they were wanting to use him more, just, I guess, trying to take a little weight off of Josh Allen's shoulders. Stephon Diggs, like you mentioned, had a really impressive catch of his own, one-handed grab where he jumped up. Just wasn't, you know, he was overshadowed by Justin Jefferson, of course, but 12 catches, season-high 16 targets, 128 receiving yards. And then Gabe Davis, 6 catches, 93 yards, and a touchdown on 9 targets. I think what we saw today on the Bills side is just that even if Allen is somewhat limited, this is still an offense that can produce for you.
Yeah, I mean, they're just good players making good plays. Gabriel Davis, you know, going out. He's seen his targets uptick the last couple weeks. So, look, a lot of it was matchup based. That's why I called Gabriel Davis like a buy low guy. So if you went out and got him before this game, like, they have another good stretch of matchups for him. So you feel good about Gabe Davis and his upside. Like, he's a boom or bust guy, but this is a week where he boomed. Like, touchdown, almost 100 receiving yards. You'd love to see it.
The Bills host the Browns next week, and the Vikings will host the Cowboys. Lions at Bears. We already talked about Justin Fields as a big takeaway. We already talked about Cole Kmet as a big takeaway. Darnell Mooney, just 4 catches on 4 targets, 57 yards. Khalil Herbert had the hip issue, 10 rushes, 57 yards. David Montgomery, 9 rushes, 37 yards. Are we just avoiding this backfield because Justin Fields has sort of become RB1?
I'm not ready to say that necessarily, because a lot of it is still like him scrambling. So they're drop backs. Like, it's like a passing play. So they're not like trying to get away from the running backs necessarily. And Justin Fields is not going to just rush for 140 yards every single week. So
it seems like he might.
Maybe he will against the Falcons. I don't want to bet against him. So, but I do think that eventually the running backs are going to get more involved. They were more involved. I mean, Khalil Herbert was still, they were both more involved this week than they were the week prior. And if Herbert is banged up in any way, then you could see Dave Montgomery having a more bell cow role.
Can the Lions just sit DeAndre Swift? I know he got in the end zone, but 6 rushes for 6 yards. If you're not going to use him like the stud he is, because he's you know, still not fully healthy, just sit him, let him get fully healthy. Jamal Williams is totally fine to carry the load. He had 16 rushes for 59 yards and a touchdown. Amon-Ra St. Brown, who was also, you know, coming back from injury issues all season long and got a little banged up in this game as well. He had 10 catches on 11 targets, 119 yards, just continues to look awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like the Amon-Ra St. Brown stat line. Like, not necessarily a guy catches a lot of touchdowns just because he plays with Jared Goff as his quarterback, but, you know, just the dude, what was his target share today? I believe it was at, what was it at?
Not sure how many times.
It was 44%. 44% target share. Like, he's just getting half the targets from Jared Goff. It's just, the buy low window is gone. Like, I tried to tell people about it, and it's gone. I'm sorry. But with DeAndre Swift, I mean, his longest carry today was 9 yards. And you said he finished with 6 yards. That's like, it's frustrating because, and the thing is too, even if Swift gets healthy, they're not going to stop using Jamal Williams on early downs. Cause Jamal Williams has been, they just don't use Jamal Williams in the passing game at all. They refuse to throw him the ball. And it's just concerning that they're still using like a number 3 back. Like, Justin Jackson is out there like getting significant work and snaps. So Swift, you're kind of just playing and just kind of hoping he just stays efficient, which he has been, because he's a really good player. But yeah, it is super frustrating because you know his ceiling is capped because, hey, he's only going to touch the ball 8 to 10 times, and you're just hoping that he rips off one big play on one of those 8 to 10 touches.
I would argue that you might even want to, if you have other options, like I would strongly consider sitting him until we see another blow up game from him, because I just don't know how you can trust the usage he's getting or the efficiency that we're seeing. Lions are at the Giants next week and Bears are at the Falcons, like you mentioned. Before we move on with the show, I'd like to take a moment to talk about Air Medcare Network. Now, in fantasy football, we do everything we possibly can to be prepared for any scenario, but sometimes the unexpected still happens. And when it happens in our game, we can chalk it up to bad luck and move on to the next week. But when emergency strikes in real life, that's the scary stuff. And it's why I want to make sure you are fully prepared with Air Medcare Network. When medical emergencies inevitably pop up, Air Medcare Network gives members the absolute best possible air transport services to the nearest hospital with zero cost out of pocket. It's less than $100 a year to cover your entire family, and frankly, what wouldn't you pay for the peace of mind of knowing that no matter what happens, you are mere minutes away from the best possible care? Whether you're an adventurous family always towing the line or an indoors family who prefers to take it easy, emergencies can and will find you. So be prepared with Air Medcare Network, who is currently offering our listeners a $50 gift card with your new membership. Just visit airmedcare.com/fantasypros and use offer code fantasypros for the peace of mind no one should live without. Let's move to Jags Chiefs. Obviously, Chiefs won this one. Christian Kirk, another great game after a long stretch in the middle of the season where he really was unproductive after that really hot start to the year. He now clearly has bounced back in the last couple of weeks. 9 catches, 105 yards, 2 touchdowns on a team-high 12 targets.
Yeah, Christian Kirk has really been one of those players. If you just look at his like box score, it's just matchups. Like when he's played, when he's faced good defenses with good secondaries, he just doesn't do that well. And when he faces favorable matchups, he has games like this. And it correlates very well with what Trevor Lawrence has done this season, where it's just like tough defenses on the road. Like you don't play Trevor Lawrence, you don't play Christian Kirk. But when it's good matchups, like it was today, 31% target share, like you mentioned, the 2 touchdowns, like Kirk is going to be productive because he's the alpha receiver in this offense. And because he's in the slot, like that helps him so much get away from certain, you know, perimeter cornerbacks that are shutting guys down. Now, if the whole defense is very, very good, then obviously you run into issues. But no, Kirk has been, I think we talked about him on one of the shows last week, but I mean, he's been, I think he's in the top 10 in fantasy wide receivers. That would not surprise me, especially even after a big game today. Might be even higher.
Trevor Lawrence, like you mentioned, 29 of 40 passing for 259 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. Zay Jones had 10 targets in this one, 8 catches, 68 yards. Are you worried at all about Travis Etienne? Just 11 rushes for 45 yards, no touchdown?
No, they just went away from him in this particular game. I still just want them to use him more in the receiving game. Like we knew the Chiefs, this is like the Chiefs' biggest weakness. And they actually used him a little bit here. Like he had pretty good yardage in the receiving game, but just still not enough volume. I mean, yeah, he had 3 targets, but still not enough volume for him. I mean, he only had 14 touches overall, which was vastly different than the last 2 weeks where he's been around like the 30 mark. So I'm not sure really why they dialed him back. Maybe just more because of the game script. They were kind of behind a little bit, even though they opened the game with an onside kick because they're like, hey, we need as many possessions as humanly possible. Didn't work out for them that way. They did miss a bunch of field goals too. So I don't think the box score, the game was closer than I think the box score would kind of like give off. But yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about Etienne.
Patrick Mahomes continues to look like Patrick Mahomes, 26 of 35, 331 yards, 4 touchdowns. Did have a pick, also 39 yards on the ground. Isaiah Pacheco, 16 carries for 82 yards, no touchdown, but no other running back had more than 1 carry in this game for Kansas City. Is he not a must-start guy, but a must-add guy?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, Edwards-Helaire, 0 carries. Like, that's like the headline of this backfield. And the thing that had been trending with this backfield was Pacheco was the guy they preferred on early downs because he's the most explosive runner. CH was the guy they used in the red zone. And now they're just kind of figuring out, you know, we could just use Pacheco in the red zone instead and just not have CH ever touch the ball. Okay, like that sounds good. And then McKinnon is obviously the featured pass catching back. So Pacheco is limited in games where it's going to be more back and forth. Like you're not going to see much of him. But dude, this is the most productive rushing line I've seen from a Chiefs running back on the ground in I don't know how long. Like 16 for 82 is just like, wow, like this is very impressive. So if you held on to Pacheco, you were kind of waiting for this type of signal that, okay, they're willing to give him the work, and they are here. So, I mean, right, rest of the season, who I want, Pacheco or Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I'm taking Pacheco.
So how high would you take him rest of the season, though? Can you put a number to it?
I'd probably put him in the top 30, just because it's still McKinnon is still involved as a receiver, and I really want to see them feature. They just don't like to just run the ball in the red zone. Like, they're just like, why don't we just give it to Mahomes? Like, which makes sense. So I would say, like, probably in the top 30.
Travis Kelce, 6 for 81 and a touchdown on 7 targets. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, 3 for 60 and a touchdown on 4 targets. Kadarius Toney getting involved, 4 for 57 and a touchdown on 5 targets. Is Toney somebody that you're starting going forward?
If Juju doesn't play next week, I think Kadarius Toney's going to be a top 36 guy.
That's, I think, completely reasonable. It's funny. Everybody, of course, had the same joke on Twitter of like, oh, like now that he's in Kansas City, he's suddenly healthy. But it is fun to watch a healthy Kadarius Toney in a good offense.
He's like, electric, yeah, he's with the ball in his hands.
Uber talented.
He was making good plays out here, too, even today.
For sure. Jags on bye next week. Chiefs are at the Chargers on Sunday Night Football next week. Let's move to Browns, Dolphins. Jeff Wilson, 17 carries, 119 yards, and a touchdown. Raheem Mostert also had a productive day if you started him. Just 8 carries, but 65 yards and a touchdown. Is it clear, though, that this is Wilson's backfield?
Yeah, I mean, everything was kind of pointing in that direction last week, and then this just kind of, like, doubles down that take where, you know, he had 17 carries, Mostert had 8. And yeah, Mostert was still productive, but, again, the games that they're both productive in are going to only happen against the very bottom run defenses of the NFL, like the Cleveland Browns. So you're not going to see Mostert and Wilson be productive in fantasy lineups together that often. So Wilson, I ranked him ahead of Raheem Mostert in my rest season rankings last week. He was in my higher, my week 10 rankings. And, you know, I remember talking about Raheem Mostert with you specifically, and I was always, like, so hesitant to, like, buy into him, like, long-term. And, well, you know, I was my hunch was correct the entire time. I didn't know it was going to play out like this necessarily, but I was always like, I can't. There's just some reason about this guy. I can't move him that high in my rest of season rankings, and it's because Jeff Wilson's here.
So would you say that Mostert is even still startable as long as Wilson is healthy?
I think I would just try to trade him, honestly. Like, he's been productive. I mean, he still scored the last 2 weeks. He still plays on a good offense, so it's not like he doesn't have any value, but it's a backfield that's not trending in his direction. Jeff Wilson is being more involved in the receiving game. And then Mostert also has a very long injury track record, which I think is the reason why they are trying to get away from him and not use him a lot, because they know that he is made of glass and that he'll break down. But he probably is the more explosive of the two running backs, just like pure speed. I mean, he used to be a track star, Ryan, if you don't know, Raheem Mostert, track star. Yeah. So I would try to trade him.
I mean, two of the fastest running backs in football on the same team. It's fun to watch. Also, two of the fastest receivers in football on that very same team. Also fun to watch. Oh, Tua, man, just has so many weapons to play with in that offense. 25 of 32 passing, 3 touchdowns, 285 yards. Just continues to look really efficient and really like he's in the perfect offense for him. Jalen Waddle, 4 catches, 66 yards on 5 targets. Tyreek Hill, just 44 yards. Not what we've usually seen from him this year, but he did have a touchdown on 6 targets. And then on the other side, Nick Chubb, 11 for 63 and a touchdown and also a fumble. I feel like I can't remember the last time I saw Nick Chubb fumble the football. It was really surprising to see. He also had 4 targets, just 18 yards in the receiving game. And Kareem Hunt did nothing. 6 carries for 9 yards, no touchdown, and 1 catch for 10 yards. Obviously, it's Nick Chubb's backfield. Hunt has been a pain for Nick Chubb managers in the past. He wasn't today, but neither of them was really productive.
No, I mean, Nick Chubb, this is just kind of what you expect. And he still ended up scoring because he just ripped off this, like, really impressive run, because he's just that. Like, that's just the Nick Chubb factor you get. Like, even in a game where they're getting blown out, like, they're really not playing competitively, he just makes a Nick Chubb run, and that's what makes him different than every other running back. So you're not worried about Chubb. And Hunt right now is really just becoming – he's not startable, and he's really just more of a hindrance on just eating into Chubb's workload, like, a little bit. You know, Chubb is obviously getting it done because of how efficient he is, and even Chubb was more involved in the receiving game than Kareem Hunt was. So Kareem Hunt has really been one of the bigger, I wouldn't say, like, misses for me, like, because he was going pretty late in draft season, but, like, someone that, like, we looked at as, like, okay, this guy could be, like, a top 24 back most weeks. Like, he has not been that at all. And we can't use the excuse that, oh, well, they're trying to trade him. Like, that's why they're saving him. So, well, the trade deadline's over. Like, that is long gone. So why aren't we using him anymore? It's because I think they like their receivers a little bit more. Like, Donovan Peoples-Jones was very exciting in this matchup. We were talking about him all week long, so very excited to see him deliver here. And the Amari Cooper road home splits came through again. Amari Cooper just disappeared, man. What happened?
I don't know. I was laughing too and thinking about Chubb. On our Friday show, we go through the No House Advantage over under picks every single week. You Myself and D-Bro all laughed at Nick Chubb's line being 13 fantasy points. We were like, he gets out of bed scoring 13 fantasy points. In this game, in half-point PPR, he finished with 13.6 fantasy points. So we were correct when we said take the over, but maybe we shouldn't have been quite as confident as we were. The Dolphins are on bye next week. The Browns, like we said, are going to be at the Bills. Before I move on with the show, I'd like to take a moment to talk about No House Advantage. No House Advantage is changing the game by offering the most dynamic fantasy sports platform available today. Play in pick'em contests against other people for a shot at winning over $150,000 in cash. Download the app, choose a contest, select your player props, earn points for correct picks, and climb the leaderboard for your shot to win big money every week. You can also test your skills versus the house and 20 times your entry if you hit all your picks. Bet on up to 5 player prop over-unders or individual player matchups across every major sports league, including NFL, NBA, MLB, PGA, MMA, and NASCAR. Sign up now with promo code PROS at nohouseadvantage.com or download the app in app stores to get a first deposit match up to $50. Make sure to check out No House Advantage today and experience daily fantasy sports redefined, because it's not just how you play, but where you play. You won't want to miss out on this. Let's move to Texans Giants. Saquon Barkley, obviously you expect big numbers, especially against the Texans, 152 yards and a touchdown. What you might not expect is 35 carries. They absolutely ran him into the ground in this one.
Yeah, no, it's always fun when you're looking through the box score and kind of see like how many carries did this guy actually end up having? Because you're seeing him get the ball a ton, you know, on red zone. It's like, oh my God, 35 carries. Like, wow. Like they were really trying to feature him. Yeah, Matt Breida had 6 carries for 20 yards. So it's all about Saquon. Like fresh off the bye week, they're like, yeah, we need to feed the beast, baby. So Saquon Barkley getting it done for the Giants. And look, Daniel Jones came through too. Like he was someone that like we were all kind of like on as a streamer. And then we kind of like, okay, like we're all starting Daniel Jones this week. Like, is this really going to work? And it did work out. Like he was very productive, you know, 2 touchdowns, like didn't really do a ton of rushing, but if you started him or streamed him, like he's not the reason you're going to lose your matchup this week, which can happen sometimes when you just stream the wrong guy and it's just a colossal massacre.
Yeah, you really have to be efficient to be productive when you only throw the ball 17 times, but he was 13 of 17, yeah. 197 yards and those 2 touchdowns you mentioned. So yeah, if you were streaming him, you will take that and run from Daniel Jones. Darius Slayton, best wide receiver on this team, 3 catches, 95 yards and a touchdown on a team high 4 targets, which again tells you how much they wanted to emphasize the running game today. On the other side, Damian Pierce, 17 carries, 94 yards. Very Damian Pierce-esque line. He did not get in the end zone in this one. Nico Collins had a team-high 10 targets, 5 catches on those 10 targets for 49 yards and a touchdown. And Brandon Cooks, stripped of being a captain on this team because he wanted to get traded, 4 catches, just 37 yards on 7 targets. Are we still at the point where Pierce is the only guy we're starting in this offense?
I mean, Nico Collins had been trending in the right direction above Brandon Cooks before his injury. And then he got hurt and then we kind of like forgot about him. But, you know, Collins was like in my top 50 this week because I like the matchup for him. And rest of the season, I'm ranking Nico Collins ahead of Brandon Cooks. Like Brandon Cooks hasn't had a game with 10 targets since week 2. Nico Collins came back from his injury and got immediately 10 targets. He leads the team in air yards. He leads the team in receiving yards. And the team doesn't hate him like Brandon Cooks, and like their relationship is just not the same. So I would, yeah, Brandon Cooks, you can't start, but Nico Collins, I would try to pick up off the waiver wire because I think that he's probably available in a lot of leagues.
Would you go so far as to put Nico Collins in the wide receiver 3 range, or is he still just primarily a bye week fill-in?
I think still probably a bye week fill-in. I'd like to probably see it again from him because like when we talk about, yes, he did get 10 targets, but he also caught 5 of them for 49 yards because Davis Mills is his quarterback. So that's the thing you always get to keep in mind. It's like, yeah, like targets are great, but like, it's going to take 10 targets every week for him to get it done because the targets he's getting are not of great value, to put it softly.
Yeah, to put it mildly. Giants host the Lions next week. Texans host the Commanders. Those are a couple of fun ones. Saints at Steelers. Najee Harris, 20 carries, 99 rushing yards. You noted here, 64% opportunity share. Jaylen Warren, a really popular sleeper in recent weeks and a guy that there's been some clamoring for maybe he should be getting more work than Najee. He went 9 for 37 on the ground. Harris had the 1 target, while Warren was targeted 3 times for 40 receiving yards. What do you make of this backfield?
Yeah, I mean, Najee looked better. It's crazy because one of his like biggest runs of the year, it looked like he almost got like hurt on. It's like, oh my God, this guy's finally breaking off a big run. And then, oh no, he got hurt on it. But he ended up going back to the game. I still think Jaylen Warren is still like the more explosive back, and they're not afraid of getting him more involved. And Najee, I believe, lost a fumble in this game or did fumble, and then they put Jaylen Warren into the game. So they're not, it's just totally different from last year where they were using Najee in every single down. That's not the case. Like, they're more than happy to get Jaylen Warren involved. And with a easier schedule coming up for the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think you're going to continue to see that. Like, you're happy with what Najee got, you know, getting nearly 100 rushing yards, but still he's getting out targeted by Jaylen Warren. He's still just like an RB too. And you're just hoping he scores.
George Pickens just 3 for 32 on 4 targets, but he did get that rushing touchdown, so salvaged a decent day for fantasy managers there. Pat Freiermuth led the Steelers in targets. He went only 4 for 36, though. Just not a very productive passing game today, or really any week, you know, that we've seen this year. Deontay Johnson 4 for 63. Alvin Kamara on the other side, just 45 yards on 11 touches. TJ Watt was back on the field for the Steelers in this one, and that really changes how the defense looks and probably changes, obviously, usually more for the passing game, but probably changes how we should look at them as a matchup for opposing offenses going forward.
Yeah, I mean, all week I was just thinking about how, like, I wanted to take the Steelers' money line because they're playing the Saints on a short week off a bye week, and TJ Watt was coming back. And I was like, these are all the signs of, like, you do not want to buy the Saints in this matchup. Like, it's a horrible spot for them. And, of course, the Steelers did end up coming through here. So, yeah, we have to – it drastically changes how you have to view the Steelers. Like, they have been a team to target for fantasy just because of how bad they've been. But even one guy like TJ Watt, because he just affects everything so much because he makes the secondary better because he gets to the quarterback faster than the pressure that they've been generating before. So even though they have a weak secondary, TJ Watt makes such a big difference generating pressure and makes it easier for everybody else up front. So, yeah, Steelers are a team that you need to be a little bit more hesitant and not just look at the season-long stats where it's going to say, oh, like, smash spot for all my guys. It's like, maybe not so much.
Yeah, there's not a ton of defenders that you can say that about, but TJ Watt is certainly one of them. Juwan Johnson, tight end for the Saints, continues to be a fairly decent streamer. He got in the end zone in this one as well. Chris Olave, 3 for 40 on 5 targets. Of course, it was going to happen the week after I just traded for him in my home league. Jarvis Landry actually had more targets, 6, you know, ahead of Olave's 5. He caught 3 for 37. Steelers host the Bengals next week, and the Saints are going to host the Rams. Let's move to Broncos at Titans. And Nick Westbrook-Ikhine was like the story of this game. This game didn't get much shine on Red Zone because it's two kind of boring teams and there wasn't a ton of scoring. But the scoring that happened came from him. 5 catches, 119 yards, and 2 touchdowns on a team high 8 targets.
Yeah, I mean, this is just going to happen. Like, it's the one matchup. So it's like the worst wide receivers in the NFL against the number one defense against wide receivers. So, of course, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is going to go off for 120 yards and 2 touchdowns. You know, no one played this guy. No one should pick up this guy. Like, it just, this is the classic case of it's a fluke. Like, do not chase these points off the waiver wire. Like, just do something else.
Would you put like a small bid just in case, or you're not even going to bother?
No, I mean, I've seen this before with guys. Like, this is like the, I don't even remember what his name was, like Ogletree line, like from a couple of years ago where some guy in the Cowboys scored 2 touchdowns and just never did anything for the rest of the season. Like, Nick Westbrook's been a starter. Like, it's not like he just had a new role. Like, he's been the starter on the offense. Now, I'm actually more interested in like Treylon Burks, who came back in this game. I believe he had 6 targets in this particular
matchup. Yep, 6
targets,
3 catches.
Yep. So that's what I'm looking at, because I know Treylon Burks is the more talented of the two players, and long term, I'd rather have Burks. So the fact that he saw 6 targets is something that I'm way more interested. So someone else can take Nick Westbrook all they want. I will take Treylon Burks as a low key addition. I don't even know what his snaps were, but the fact that he got 6 targets, I can't imagine he was playing a full snap share. And actually, I noticed that Pat Surtain was on Treylon Burks a lot, which means that Nick Westbrook was getting more favorable looks, which is why he was open. But the team was giving more respect towards Treylon Burks, because I do think that he is the better receiver in real life and the guy that I'd rather have for fantasy purposes.
Derrick Henry, 19 for 53 on the ground, 2 for 14 through the air, no touchdowns. On the Broncos side, we already mentioned Greg Dulcich, just 1 catch, 11 yards on 4 targets. Not the, you know, good game we were hoping from him. Courtland Sutton, team high 11 targets. You know, like you said, he is the guy that they want to go after, you know, when Jerry Jeudy's not in the game. Just 6 catches for 66 yards, though.
Yep, the number of the beast stat line for Courtland Sutton. Look, I'm really at a weird place with Courtland Sutton right now, because it's one of these things where if Jerry Jeudy's going to miss time, then you're going to probably see him put up production like he was during the beginning of the season. And I know that this offense is just not, it's not great. It really isn't. But they're also playing the Raiders next week. And if there's any team that's like more dysfunctional than the Denver Broncos right now, it's the Las Vegas Raiders, who just lost to the Colts, as we will get into. So, yeah, I mean, Sutton, look, he obviously has not lived up to my expectations, you know, for this season as a whole. But is he still a useful piece that you can use in your lineup? Yeah, especially when Jerry Jeudy misses games. Like, this is when we've seen him put up double digits. It's just really the touchdowns that are really what's killing him. And just not scoring touchdowns. He only has one touchdown this year, when that's kind of how he made his hay as a red zone monster. But, you know, Russell Wilson just not throwing touchdowns.
Jalen Virgil caught a touchdown from Russell Wilson. One catch, 66 yards and a touchdown. It was his first career catch. Don't go chasing that on the waiver wire.
Never, did not know who he was. I was like, is this guy?
Latavius Murray, 9 rushes for 24 yards. Melvin Gordon, 7 rushes for 24 yards. Chase Edmonds, 2 rushes for 9 yards. Don't start any of these guys. Don't roster any of these guys. This backfield is a complete wasteland. You want nothing to do with it. The Broncos host the Raiders next week. The Titans are at the Packers on Thursday Night Football. Let's move to the late afternoon slate. Just 3 games here. Colts at Raiders. Like you mentioned, 25 for the Colts, 20 for the Raiders. Jeff Saturday is 1-0 as an NFL head coach. I'm sure that's a better record than his high school coaching career was. We already talked about Jonathan Taylor. Again, 22 rushes, 147 yards, and a touchdown. Like, he was fully back, it appeared, which is really exciting for anybody who took him number one overall. A note I saw here from Andrew Siciliano on Twitter: Matt Ryan's 39-yard rush was longer alone than any game he had had in terms of rushing in his NFL career, which has spanned 15 years. So that was one of the most shocking plays of the entire day.
Yeah, I mean, well, the fact that Jeff Saturday was smart enough to just put Matt Ryan on our center, I think he deserves credit. Like, it's weird, too, because, you know, maybe this was all a facade. Like, he was coming on here, like, pretending like he didn't know what he was doing. And he even said that he was going to stick with Ellinger as his quarterback. So, you know, give him some kudos. Like, I thought Ellinger, I mean, I ranked Ellinger higher than Matt Ryan this week, and that was wrong. So, I think it is good.
I do wonder how much of the QB in and out with Matt Ryan was Jim Irsay and not necessarily Frank Reich / Jeff Saturday.
That's true. And also, Matt Ryan was, like, also hurt, I guess, too. Mm-hmm. Like, he was dealing with an injury. I guess this week was the first week he was healthy. So maybe if he had not been actually healthy, he would have not started. But either way, it is really good for just all the pass catchers. Paris Campbell got it done today. Michael Pittman did enough. Both of those guys got 9 targets. Paris Campbell found the end zone. So, yeah, it's good. Like, if you have Michael Pittman, like, obviously it's been a horrendous last couple of weeks, but having Matt Ryan back under center gives you hope that, okay, like, we can salvage this and, you know, look at him as more as a wide receiver. Two, Paris Campbell has been really a fringy guy at best, but does give you some confidence in the right matchups that, okay, Paris Campbell maybe we can use as a bye week fill-in.
Josh Jacobs continues to get the volume, even though the explosion hasn't been there for a couple weeks now. 21 rushes, 78 yards and a touchdown. Perfectly fine day. 28 yards through the air as well on 8 targets, a high number for him. Davante Adams, 9 catches, 126 yards and a touchdown on a team high 14 targets. A very Davante Adams-esque day. Raiders are at the Broncos next week, and the Colts will host the Eagles. That will be a shellacking, unless Jeff Saturday is really just, you know, the best coach in football now. Let's move to Cardinals Rams. Cardinals scored 27, Rams 17. Really not much of a takeaway here because it was 2 backup quarterbacks in this game. James Conner did have 21 rushes for 69 yards and 2 touchdowns, so he had the best fantasy day for sure. Obviously, we knew they were going to lean on the running game with Kyler Murray out. Rondale Moore had 9 catches, 94 yards on 13 targets. DeAndre Hopkins had 10 catches, 98 yards on 14 targets to lead the team. So obviously Colt McCoy was just relying on his 2 best receivers to carry him and looking to them every time he dropped back to pass. But again, not really much to take away when Kyler's not in there.
Yeah, I think the bigger thing is to focus on Zach Ertz not being there. And the fact that it becomes even more concentrated on guys like Rondale Moore and DeAndre Hopkins, like double-digit targets for both these guys, especially Rondale Moore, who was a guy you could have gotten waivers like very early on, was a guy we had a lot of start sit questions about. And I'm like, guys, like, Colt McCoy can do what Kyler was doing. Kyler was just dumping the ball off to his receiver. Like, Colt McCoy can do that too. And that was clearly not holding this guy back this particular week. I mean, AJ Green, of course, caught the touchdown. I'm like, when was the last time AJ Green caught a touchdown? I was like, that's wild. But he only had 2 targets. So, and Trey McBride, who you think would take a bigger role as a rookie tight end with Zach Ertz out, really didn't do that much. So you were just feeling great about Rondale Moore, I think, as a I think you have to just keep starting him. Like, there's no reason what he's seeing, double-digit targets in a super pass-heavy offense, you're going to keep playing Rondell Moore.
Yeah, not just double-digit targets. You will, on occasion, see other teams have, like, Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill will both get 10 targets. To both have 13-plus, that's a pretty significant number. That is a really concentrated usage tree for those two. So I think that's a great point. If Ertz is out for any extended period of time, which it kind of looks like it would be, of course, we have nothing definitive yet, but I think Moore becomes a pretty much obvious must start. Hopkins already was, of course. Cam Akers, 6 rushes. Darrell Henderson, 6 rushes. Neither of them topped 22 yards. Henderson did get in the end zone. Tyler Higbee, 8 for 73 on 8 targets. Van Jefferson got in the end zone. Allen Robinson, 4 for 44. I'm mentioning all these, but again, not much to take away when Matthew Stafford wasn't even the guy under center for the Rams in this one. And Cooper Kupp, 3 catches for -1 yards. On 5 targets, just a very un-Kupp-like day, even, you know, before the injury took place. So certainly we'll hope to see hit. We hope for good news on Kupp. And obviously we hope for good news long-term on Stafford as well, because if he's not in there, this offense is, it's already borderline avoidable, but it's completely avoidable if he's not in there. The Cardinals are going to host the 49ers on Monday Night Football next week, and the Rams are at the Saints. And the Cowboys-Packers actually ended while we were on the air. It looks like the Packers won that one 31-28 in overtime. Aaron Jones, there were some questions about his health coming into the day, but he ended with 24 carries, 138 yards, and a touchdown.
I mean, that's what we were sure. We weren't sure about his injury. So that's like the biggest concern about with Jones was, okay, how healthy is he? And for him to come out and look spry. You know, this game had come up a couple times when I was watching some of the later games, and they were feeding him early on. I believe like Aaron Rodgers was not, they were like not throwing the ball at all. It was basically like, okay, you know, maybe we'll get a touchdown to Christian Watson. If not, then we're just going to run the ball with Aaron Jones. So AJ Dillon continues to underwhelm. Like, oh God, it's horrible. Just like every time he touches the ball, he's just like not making the right reads. He's not staying upright. He's not breaking tackles. So Aaron Jones is their best player on offense. Well, not named Christian Watson, but
yeah, AJ Dillon did average 5 yards per carry, 13 for 65. But yeah, I mean, that's not going to help you in fantasy. You don't really care about that. It's certainly not enough. Yeah, you mentioned, I probably buried the lead by not starting with him on this game. Christian Watson, 4 catches, 3 of them went for touchdowns, 107 yards, a long of 58, 8 targets, which more than doubled up, or it did double up Alan Lazard as the next highest of any Packers receiver. So he was the apple of Aaron Rodgers' eye, and he obviously hasn't been healthy this season. Now that he is, he looked really explosive and like he could be a difference maker for this offense, because they just dropped 31 points against, according to DVOA, the best defense in football coming into this week.
Yeah, and I mean, this was like this almost like the skeleton key for them. It's like Christian Watson unlocked this offense to actually do, I mean, this team couldn't do anything against the Lions last week. They couldn't do anything against the Commanders, and then they come out and put up 30 on Dallas Cowboys, who we all thought was like a legitimately good defense, because, oh, what changed? Oh, well, Christian Watson was fully healthy. Oh, wow, he makes a huge difference. So looking back at guys, rookie receivers that have 3 touchdowns in the same game, last guy to do it, Ja'Marr Chase. For him, these guys like Chase Claypool, guys like Odell Beckham Jr., Calvin Ridley. Like, when you do this, it's not like, oh, well, it's like a one-time thing. It's like, no, like, you have to be a special player to catch 3 touchdowns as a rookie in the same game.
Yeah, so, it's Bill James used to talk about signature significance, where if you do something that is impressive enough, it doesn't matter if it's a small sample size. You have to have a certain talent level to be able to have a 100-yard, 3 touchdown game in the NFL as a rookie. And yeah, it's totally impressive. I'm assuming he's basically not rostered in any redraft leagues at this point in the season. So how much of your fab would you be spending on him if he's available?
I would probably empty my budget, honestly, for him. I mean, the fact that he was, I mean, it seems like this is like the first game we've actually seen him play fully healthy, like the entire, because even every games that he's like flashed in, it's like, oh, he got like checked for a concussion. Like he left this game with another injury. And even in this game, he was like dealing with another injury. So there is that concern that the guy has shown a lot of like, okay, he's not super upright all the time. Like he's a little bit injury prone. And there was, you were expecting some type of rawness with him coming in, you know, from a division two, like a smaller school, that he wasn't going to necessarily hit the ground running. And you rewind all the way back to week one. You know, what happens if he catches that touchdown against the Minnesota Vikings instead of drops the long touchdown? Does it change the entire like Green Bay Packers outlook? Do the Vikings even win that game? Are the Vikings even 8-1? So
wow.
I think that going in on Christian Watson makes a lot of sense. It is, there is some risk involved in it, but it's clear that he has the most upside of these Packers wide receivers. Even though I like the Lazard a lot, I think Lazard will still have some better days coming ahead. But, I mean, it's imagine if Watson had been running all the routes Romeo Doubs had been running this year. Like, what do you think the Packers offense would have looked like? And it probably would have looked a lot more like this.
Or imagine if they had both of them available on the field.
Yeah.
On the Cowboys side, not a ton of surprises. Some really big stat lines. CeeDee Lamb, 15 targets, 11 catches, 150 yards, and two touchdowns. We know he's great. This is obviously his best game of the year, unless I'm totally forgetting an earlier blowout performance. And then with no Zeke, Tony Pollard did what we all would have expected him to do, knowing that there was no Zeke. 22 carries, 115 yards, and a touchdown. Just obviously like the must start of must starts in any game that Zeke isn't playing.
I mean, unless you're Jerry Jones, like it just seems so simple. Just like play Tony Pollard and then you just get this type of production every single time. It's like, why even play Zeke? I don't know. It's super frustrating, but yeah, just I wish Jerry Jones would just open his eyes and just watch the games and be like, dude, like
we
just
all
play
wish
Tony
that.
Pollard.
We all wish it. Dalton Schultz had 6 catches for 54 yards. And a touchdown. We will get out on that. Actually, Mayer put in the chat for everybody listening, Zach Ertz is expected to miss multiple weeks. So again, that certainly raises the bar for Rondale Moore and DeAndre Hopkins. Just again, it's a really narrow usage tree going forward. That'll do it for us. Again, we are back every Sunday night, 7:45 Eastern. Everybody listening, please remember to check out my playbook to help get your team optimized and ready to go for the second half of the season. Also, please don't forget the opportunities we mentioned with Air Medcare Network and No House Advantage. For Erickson and Deepak, I'm Ryan Wormley. We will see you guys again next week.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.